Hi, and welcome to the fourth podcast in our series, which is about nonprofit search engine optimization in the 21st century. I'm your host, Jim O'Reilly, and I'm joined by Birgit Pauli Hawk. We are among the founders of NP Tech Projects. Before we start on our topic for today, Birgit has completed the work needed to get these recordings online.
Yes, hello everybody. Yeah, we are finally live with the first three episodes. We built the online space on our website using the plugin Seriously Simple Podcasting by my fellow WordPress community deputy, Hugh Lashbrook and Jake Spiller. You find all the show notes at nptechprojects.org/podcast. nptechprojects.org/podcast. We use Google Cloud Storage as our content delivery network to provide extra fast download for the audio files to our subscribers. You can now subscribe to our podcast with your favorite podcast app. We are listed on iTunes, on Stitcher, as well as on Blueberry. And dear listeners, it would be so wonderful if you could take a few moments of your time and write us an iTunes review.
You heard it. Subscribe via iTunes and leave us a review. Now, let's begin by talking about what SEO is and why it's important to you. Birgit, perhaps you can lead us off.
In the second decade of the 21st century, nonprofit SEO is about helping search engines to find you and reward you for your consistent record of fresh, engaging content. What does that mean? When donors are using a search engine to find your type of charity, you want them to find your website easily. The same is true when potential clients are in need of your services. And of course, you want to be found when volunteers are searching for a worthwhile cause to join. The first place most people go nowadays is Google or YouTube or Bing. SEO means search engine optimization, and we will talk about how you make sure you are found. We won't cover all there is to know in this episode, but we will cover the basics a content producer would need to know to avoid penalties or a 12th page ranking. In this podcast episode, we speak primarily about on-site SEO. We are presuming that you have already selected a content management system and the CMS will take care of HTML and architecture issues. In the early days of the internet, search engines rewarded static sites with the most and best keyword. SEO became a game of beating the search engines by using the best keywords as often as possible, both in your content as well as in the HTML. Today, nonprofit SEO is measurement indicator of the successful content marketing. Are you providing the content that users of Google and others are looking for? And if you are you the most current and are you using up-to-date information? Do experts refer to you as an expert in your field? Jim has an interesting story for us.
My story is not a nonprofit example, but I'm sure you still can relate. The story is about a man called Marcus Sheridan, who has a business building and selling swimming pools. In 2008, his industry was going through a down cycle, and Marcus decided to turn it around through blogging. I'm now quoting Marcus. On our site, we literally answer every question a consumer could possibly have about buying a fiberglass pool. Each time we received a question or comment, it was a reason to write another blog. In February of 2013, Mark Cohen of the New York Times wrote about the beginnings of Marcus's story, and I'm quoting him now. By early 2009, his company, River Pools and Spas, a 20-employee installer of in-ground fiberglass pools in both Virginia and Maryland, had a decline in orders from an average of 6 a month to barely 2. That winter, 4 customers who had planned to install pools costing more than $50,000 each demanded their deposits back. For 3 consecutive weeks, the company overdrew its bank account. Around this time, Mr. Sheridan began to overhaul his marketing. The company had been spending about $250,000 a year on radio, television, and pay-per-click advertising. It would now cut the budget to about a tenth of that and focus on generating sales through informational blog posts and videos, which has become known as content marketing. But Mr. Sheridan took an unconventional approach to his content. As a result, River Pools has recovered to exceed its pre-2007 revenue, and Mr. Sheridan, a 35-year-old father of 4, has become something of a web marketing guru. While he still owns a 33% interest in the pool company, his partners manage it day to day while he concentrates on his new venture, the Sales Lion.
That's a marvelous story. And I'm going to read two questions from that interview, and maybe you can think about from the nonprofit point of view. First question he was asked was, what was the first question you answered? And Sheridan, the question I was always asked within the first 2 minutes of talking to customers was, how much does a fiberglass pool cost? Pool installers are like mattress or car dealers. We hate talking about how much a pool costs until we have you in person, because there are so many other options and accessories we want to sell. As a result, pool companies never mention price on their websites. But I said, I don't care what the question is, we are going to answer it. Then, did you actually tell people the price of a pool? Mr. Cohen asked him. Marcus Sheridan said, no, because I couldn't. But see, that's the magic behind this. Google's search engine doesn't really care if we answer the question. It's just looking for companies that are willing to address the question. And here the editor's note. Remember this fact, you will see it again. Sheridan continues, so I said in that article, there are a ton of options. So it depends, the price can range anywhere from 20,000 to 200,000, and a lot of our customers end up between 40,000 and 80,000. And that was enough. Within about 24 hours of writing that article, it was number one for every fiberglass pool cost-related phrase you could possibly type in. And because I have analytics so far to this day, I've been able to track a minimum of 1.7 million in sales to that one article. That's it from Marco Sheridan. As nonprofit organizations working for a cause against poverty, public awareness, you are in an equally expert position to write about your cause from the various angles. Jim, you had some excellent thoughts on how to get started.
Hopefully, the importance of having search engines direct traffic to your site is now obvious. Let's get started with a plan for you to improve your public awareness by attracting visitors to your website. First, and I'm sure this will get your attention, we'll concentrate on donors. In this category, you need to make a list of everything you think a donor may want to find about in your area of interest. Then make a list by topic, prioritize the list, and plan to write one piece of content every day, week, or month for your site. If your site was commercial, this would be referred to as the money list, and you would want to address things like discount sales, etc. For a nonprofit, you will need to list things like a description of what you've been able to do with current donations, and more importantly, what you can accomplish by increasing the number of donors. You could also publish testimonials from recipients of your activities, and if possible, testimonials from other donors about the communication they receive, telling them about how their donations were used. A video, voice recording, or even a graphic of letters received will greatly help. You may want to consider a podcast. That's how you're receiving this information, and hopefully enjoying the information to which you're listening. Then you repeat the same process for potential clients or beneficiaries with the same commitment to write and post content. In this section, you want recipients of your services to be able to read about the services offered, how they can take advantage, and once again, expressions of gratitude in the form of testimonials. Of course, you need to do the same for volunteers. What do volunteers do now, and what could they do if you could obtain more volunteer time? It's crucial to describe the satisfaction derived by volunteering for your organization. Birgit, how about telling us about the importance of the words used?
Words matter, specifically keywords. And on a side note, for those of us who have been around the internet for a while, keywords have almost the same negative connotation as the term blogging does for others. There's this old SEO joke. And picture, if you will, reading what I'm about to say. An SEO expert walks into a bar, bars, pub, public house, Irish pub, and drinks beer, wine, liquor, Grey Goose, Crystal. This is an example of horrible writing created by keyword stuffing. And we have probably visited real sites that read like that, too. You and I know that a restaurant and a cafe are quite similar, and now, thanks to 18 years of practice in spam fighting, so does Google's algorithm. A couple of weeks ago, I was listening to a WordPress Weekly podcast about SEO published by the site WP Tavern. It is a site that publishes news about WordPress multiple times a day. But when you search for the phrase WordPress news, the site was not listed in Google's search result pages, which was kind of odd. When this was researched, it turned out that on the whole site, the phrase WordPress news was never used. So Google wouldn't index the site for this particular keyword search. Now that the site's title has changed to WordPress Tavern, WordPress news free as in beer, and the homepage is now listed on the first page for that particular phrase. In order to optimize for search engine, you would need to know the basics, how search engines work. Although working on it since its beginning in 1998, Google revamped its search engine algorithm again in 2013 and called it Hummingbird. Google's algorithm was always about synonyms and tried to gauge the searcher's intent. With the release of Hummingbird, Google is now even more able to detect context and get better and better in understanding the intent of the searcher. The algorithm has four phases. The first one is crawling. It's a script made to harvest all the data stored on websites. The search engine crawler stops by at your site, collects all the information, follows links further deeper into the site from the menu bar and from your content, and your web developer, hosting company, and content management system optimize your site's architecture in order for the crawler to go all the places it needs to go. You won't have to learn anything about it. Once crawled, the information is collected. The next phase is called parsing. It interprets all the information collected, sorts it, and sends it to the index. That brings us to the third phase called indexing. In that phase, the algorithm identifies and associates resources related to the keywords and phrases and puts it in the various vertical indices like videos, documents, images, books, apps, etc. These first three phases, most people won't notice. The fourth phase is the search phase. That's when Hummingbird really shines. It understands the query of the user, retrieves the information related to the query from the indices, filters it, and clusters the information found, and then creates the search engine result pages. And the last phase is when the 200 plus ranking factors, including Rank Brain, comes in and spam filters, search spam filters like Panda and Penguin are applied. Personally, I'm fascinated by all that what goes into building the website that made Google one of the largest companies in the world in the last 18 years. And I'm also aware that people working in nonprofit marketing, communication and fundraising will never have the time to keep up with all the highly technical specifics. So I leave it at that and come back to earth and ask, what does it all mean for your day-to-day operation, updating content on your website? Google always claimed, and I believe it has never been truer than now, focus and write for your audience, your people. If it's quality content and they get what they came for from your website, it's also positioned to rank well in Google. Focus on words your potential readers will be searching for. Not only the keywords, but also words that demonstrate how well you cover the certain topic. When you prepare a blog post, it's best to concentrate on one topic, not trying to do too much. Try to increase the quality of your content, write from different angles, provide helpful and engaging content to your readers to consume. Often I'm asked, how long should your blog post be? Well, you may be able to cover a single topic with 300 words. but a writer using 700 and 800 words will probably provide deeper, richer content for the reader. And I also should mention that there's some debate about this. Some say that 200-300-word articles is better than 1-600-word article. I guess it always depends on the topic, as well as the people you're trying to reach. The titles and subtitles you use tell both the reader and the search engines about the content of the following phrases and paragraphs. They provide a hierarchy of importance. Keep in mind that for people outside the expert bubble, certain words have different meanings, and your future non-expert visitor might look for information with a different set of words. For instance, an article about recidivism and homelessness could use the layman terms of housing and self-sufficiency in the title if the intended reader is not an academic or a fellow fighter of homelessness. So Jim, how do you do that?
Let's talk about that for a minute and use an example. Let's suppose you are a charity for homeless veterans. If you Google the term, you will find search results with search ads, newspaper articles, and a helpful new feature from Google, a card that is titled People Also Ask. In this case, the People Also Ask provides titles and subtitles by topic. For example, what percentage of homeless people are veterans? Are most homeless people veterans? Which state has the most military veterans? The site Search Engine Land published the 2016 Guide to Keywords. You'll find the link in the show notes too. As you post, your site will begin to be seen as active as opposed to static, and you'll begin to be seen as a nonprofit authority in your subject area. Now, what is contained in the content comes under the subject areas of Fresh and On-Site for on-page SEO. This sounds and is logical. Now let's talk about some various sub-features. For example, links. Links matter. The links you use are a measurement of how well you understand your topic. If you link to authoritative sites and authors, your own level of authority is embellished by your readers. It is important to use high-quality links. The words in the links. The words you use must be relevant and commonly used by the consumers of your site's product. If the words are not relevant, the link will not be used, and you've eliminated the possibility of that link owner linking back to you. Reputation. The more reputable your site, the higher the ranking in search engine algorithms. The search engines will raise your ranking as a result of the quality of your links, the number of likes you record on social media sites, and so forth. Birgit?
As promised, we are coming now to what are the five tasks that are habit-forming you have to consider to complement your content with the right SEO stuff. The page or post title should be helpful for the reader to know what this article is about. It is also the place where you let the search engine know what the specific topic of your page is. Keep it under 75 characters and use normal words. Be specific, don't be cute. For subheaders, you need to find out how your content management system formats the text with heading 2. This should be easy to find in a manual or on Google when you search for the phrase, how to create heading 2 in followed by the name of your content management system. No caps. All caps on internet are considered to be yelling and shouting. If you're tempted to use capital letters for emphasis, use bold or subheader formatting. You will use graphics and photos to accompany and illustrate your blog posts. Their file name can support your emphasis on a certain topic if the particular words are actually in the file name and replace the name convention from your camera. If you're not able to rename the graphic file, make sure that you at least fill in the so-called alt text field when adding images to your post. Alt text, or alternative text, is a word or phrase that can be inserted as an attribute in an HTML document to tell website viewers the nature or contents of an image. In other words, when you insert an image, you have the opportunity to tell the search engine what the image is about. Without the alt text, the search engine just sees it as a blank space. And by the way, that's also what screen readers use for visitors with visual impairment. Good SEO is making sure your content, your site's content, is relevant to what you have to offer, optimized to use the same language commonly used by consumers. Google nowadays separates listing pages by devices. If your site is not very well visible on mobile devices, your site won't be listed on mobile search result pages. We mentioned earlier that your content management system will do the SEO technical stuff and you wouldn't need to worry about it. I have to take that back in one regard. If your content management system does not provide you with a responsive theme or layout, your site does not perform well on mobile devices. All your SEO efforts won't have the intended outcome, as your site won't show up in the result pages of the searches. You definitely need to take care of that part first. If you want to know how Google sees your site to determine if it's mobile optimized, use their page speed testing tool. You'll find the link in the show notes of this episode. You go to the site in your browser, and in the form you enter your website's URL, and it will test its speed and display for both desktop as well as mobile. And it will tell you which part of it, if anything, slows your website down. Speaking of tools, Jim, what else do you have?
Now that you have a content plan together, a list of topics, and a publishing calendar, how do you measure if what you're publishing is actually successful? Your visitors will vote with their touch and their mice, and your site analytics tool is able to track this. Remember, you are not just after visitors, you want the right visitors. You are after specific engagement from those who come to your site. When you think of engagement, you think of donors and sponsors, those who need your services, and the volunteers who make things work. How do your readers express engagement? They might stay and explore and read more than one page. They might sign up for your newsletter. They might donate online or fill out the volunteer application form. Or they share your content with their own networks, all actions signaling engagement. Next week, we'll give you an introduction to Google Analytics, the free tool by Google that allows you to measure your traffic, learn where your visitors come from, and which content posted on your site performs the best. So for now, I'll say goodbye.
Until the next time, goodbye.